This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com.
And this is James Evan Pilato of MediaMonarchy.com, and we both welcome you back once again to the latest episode of The New World Next Week, our weekly video series where we give you three stories and hopefully the context and the subtext so you can go do some more research for yourself. And again, this is not a one-way street. All of these things, I think, James, in the alternative media, we need to share this information. So that's how this all kind of grows. So please comment, share ideas, and help us all kind of flesh out these stories. We also want to mention newworldnextweek.com is where you can get the high-quality versions of these shows every week. So, James, without further ado, we're going to have kind of a geopolitical episode, and our three stories, I suppose, kind of go from the past, present, to the future. And we're going to start with a story that comes from The Independent, independent.co.uk. Mao's Great Leap Forward killed 45 million in 4 years. Mao Zedong, founder of the People's Republic of China, qualifies as the greatest mass murderer in world history, an expert who had unprecedented access to official Communist Party archives said. Speaking at the Independence newspaper recent literary festival, Frank Decotter, Hong Kong-based historian, said he found that during the time that Mao was enforcing the Great Leap Forward, with a link for you just to Wikipedia to flesh out this story, the Great Leap Forward started in 1958 in an effort to catch up with the economy of the Western world. He was responsible for overseeing one of the worst catastrophes the world has ever known. Mr. Decotter, the author, has been studying Chinese rural history from 58 to 62, this four-year time period of Mao's Great Leap Forward, when the nation was facing a famine, compared the systematic torture, brutality, starvation, and killing of Chinese peasants to the Second World War in its magnitude. At least 45 million people were worked, starved, or beaten to death in China over these 4 years. In comparison, the worldwide death toll of the Second World War was 55 million. Mr. Decotter is the only author to have delved into the Chinese archives since they were reopened 4 years ago. He argued that this devastating period of history, which has until now remained hidden, has international resonance. It ranks alongside the gulags and the Holocaust as one of the three greatest events of the 20th century. It was like Pol Pot's genocide multiplied 20 times. Between 58 and 62, a war raged between the peasants and the state. It was a period when a third of all homes in China were destroyed to produce fertilizer and when the nation descended into famine and starvation. His new book is called Mao's Great Famine, The Story of China's Most Devastating Catastrophe, reveals that while this is part of history that has been quite forgotten in the official memory of the PRC, there was a staggering degree of violence that was remarkably carefully cataloged in Public Security Bureau reports. Now, James, you and I discussed before this show exactly what was new about this story. And that's the interesting thing. This has been known, although he refers to it as being quite forgotten. James, let me get your take on this story before we give a little bit of the background and the supplemental information.
Well, as a great bard once said, if you go carrying pictures of Chairman Mao, you ain't going to make it with anyone anyhow, and that is absolutely right. It isn't new, but it does deserve to be reflected upon that people will inflict such incredible bloodshed and carnage and human suffering on people in the name of some utopia. And this has to be, people have to continue to reflect on this and continue to be reminded that when people come along offering you some political utopia and re-education in the name of, saving humanity, it is always a false front for the urge to rule humanity and to spill blood in just unthinkable quantities. So it's just another reminder of what has been done in the past and what could easily happen in our present and future.
So, a quick little bit of background. After a trip to China in 1973, David Rockefeller praised Mao Zedong, who had slaughtered over 40 million people. His report, his article called From a China Traveler, highlights the goals presented in United Nations reports such as the Commission on Global Governance and UNESCO's Our Creative Diversity. Both focus on lofty ideals such as peace, harmony, and unity in the communitarian global village, a vision that demands absolute control and universal participation in facilitated small groups. Let's take a quote from David Rockefeller's From a China Traveler. Quote, One is impressed immediately by the sense of national harmony. Whatever the price of the Chinese Revolution, it's obviously succeeded in fostering high morale and community purpose. General social and economic progress is no less impressive. The social experiment in China under Chairman Mao's leadership is one of the most important and successful in history. August 10th, 1973, David Rockefeller, New York Times.
And the thing to keep in mind about that is that everyone says, oh, only Nixon could go to China. But of course, Nixon was preceded to China by Rockefeller, who was there for the banksters and softening the way for the Nixon visit. And then who was Nixon, who was his organizer, was Rockefeller henchman Heinz Kissinger. So definitely Mao was the darling of the globalists' eye, and they still speak fondly of China as the model for the New World Order. And it's despicable, and we have to absolutely resist it with every last breath.
And I think that's why it's worth exposing an old story from the past to bring it to the present.
I agree.
But now, let's move to our second story, and I thank actually an acquaintance at my workplace for kind of telling me about this. We take this from the New York Times. Swedish anti-immigration party claims seats. Sweden became the latest European nation to see a breakthrough for populist right-wingers when the anti-immigration Sweden Democrats won their first parliamentary seats in elections that failed to produce a clear outcome. They're just now sorting out all the votes, even as I speak to you here on Wednesday, September 22nd, in the States. Unlike nearby Denmark and Norway, where populist anti-immigration parties have been successful for years, voters in Sweden had never before given the Sweden Democrats sufficient support to overcome the 4% threshold they needed to reach the parliament. James, why this really struck me was, again, knowing very little about Scandinavian nations and Sweden in particular here, I sometimes think of it as almost one of those kind of amazing, awe-inspiring places where it's clean, it's well-run, people are taken care of, there's great advancements, there's much harmony, there's no war. But now we see in countries around the world people succumbing to an anti-immigration fervor. So whether that's against the Mexicans in the United States or apparently here against the Muslims, we see throughout history, I think, the scapegoating of immigrants and fingers being pointed at those groups. And, of course, James, generally it's international banksters that have caused the problems. When people start to realize, hey, why is our economy crumbling? It's those people. Let's blame them. So, unfortunately, in most immigration situations, it comes back to a distraction, distracting people from the real problems.
Right. And, there's a lot of things you mentioned there. You mentioned the idea that a lot of people have that these Scandinavian countries are some wonderful paradise, but that's all PR for the nanny state, which is often really controlling and smothering. And I think there's a lot of things that bubble under the surface in these countries, and that's what's coming up here. But as you say, it just gets shunted off into this phony right-wing populism that's all about hating on peoples from other countries, and probably because, you know, these are the terrorists that did 9/11 and other such lies like that. So, we have to be aware that although reactions against the nanny state and all things like that can be good and healthy, but we have to worry about them getting shunted off into political avenues that are blind alleys or wrong way streets. So, so this is perhaps another example of that. But I believe. As you were going to tie this into talking about some of the other things that are going on in Europe and the ways that people are rising up against the European Union in itself.
That we've heard talk, and I believe it was from Bob Chapman from theinternationalforecaster.com, a monthly guest on corbettreport.com, was speculating that there could be a coup very soon in Greece. Of course, Greece has been pummeled by the controlled demolition of the world economies. And if Greece would have a coup, one could then easily speculate that Spain perhaps wouldn't be very far behind, or Portugal, or Ireland, even, you know, for that matter. A lot of these nations, again, have had their backs broken by central, international, private banksters who have a financial system based on debt, and they own it.
That's right. That's right. The dominoes are falling in Europe right now, and it's just a question of which way they're going to fall, and hopefully they can fall in a way that will be freeing and liberating and beneficial for the peoples of Europe and not just another form of dictatorship.
Bloodless.
Yes.
The one other thing I want to mention before we go into our last blast of strangeness here on New World next week, I want to mention as far as Muslims go, if I may, they're the ones who did 9/11. Something I did go over in my recent 9/11 ninth anniversary episode is that it traces back to, of course, the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan and Operation Cyclone. The Department of Defense printed textbooks for young Afghanis showing them how to become violent. So when we talk about Muslims, Islam, they just want to destroy us. You have to trace back who taught them that. We put it in their textbooks. So I would implore folks, before they fall victim to all this Quran burning, divide and conquer garbage, to do a little research. So now, having said all that, James, this was a story that is a little too bizarre to pass up, and it also really speaks to what seems to be unfolding, predictive programming, if you will. Taking it from The Guardian, Pope's astronomer says he would baptize an alien if it asked him. Aliens might have souls and could choose to be baptized if humans ever met them, a Vatican scientist said. The official also dismissed intelligent design as bad theology that had been hijacked by American creationist fundamentalists. Guy Consomagno, who's one of the Pope's astronomers, said he would be delighted if intelligent life was found among the stars, but the odds of us finding it, of it being intelligent, and of us being able to communicate with them when you add it up, it's probably not a practical question. Speaking ahead of a talk at the British Science Festival in Birmingham, he said the traditional definition of a soul was to have intelligence, free will, freedom to love, and freedom to make decisions. Quote, any entity, no matter how many tentacles it has a soul. Well, would he baptize an alien? Only if they asked, he said. James, let me quickly blast through some of the related stories that, again, seems to be, as part of the agenda, things are escalating as far as some type of space event. We can call that, you know, Project Bluebeam or some type of faked alien or even religious rapture type event. We can't get into all of that right now, but we see the building of it everywhere. Story came out just a few days ago, and I get this from Jonathan Elanoff's NewWorldOrderReport.com. Ex-NORAD officer predicts tentative worldwide UFO display on October 13th. And I believe off the top of my head, Freeman, of Freeman Perspective, has also speculated for quite some time about some type of October 13th event this year, 2010. If we hop back to April of this year, of course, connecting it all back to the Vatican, Lucifer Telescope built next to Vatican's Arizona Observatory. And as long as we're talking Vatican, the other story in the news right now is, of course, Vatican Bank faces money laundering probe. And that's just another story. We say, stop the presses. The Vatican Bank is involved in shady money dealings? All you got to do is check out a guy named Roberto Calvi, who died in June of 1982. He was referred to as God's banker. And, of course, he connects to the P2 Lodge, the Masonic Lodge, the Mafia, the Vatican Bank. All of these things are connected. But bringing us back to, James, baptizing an alien.
You know, it kind of sucks for the aliens that they have to travel hundreds of light years to come and get baptized by the Pope's astronomer. But, what can you say about this other than just to tie it in, as you just did, to all of the other little bits and pieces that are coming out? And it does seem like a coordinated campaign to just ratchet up the noise on this type of alien conditioning that we're being subjected to, and I guess to some extent have been subjected to since the 50s. And it's really ratcheting up right now, and it's interesting to watch. And
yes, I just hope. And the Vatican said several months ago that it's okay to believe in aliens, reversing themselves on century-long standing. And then you tie in film and television and TV, you know, V and the event and all of these things. It's predictive programming. For what end? We're going to have to wait and see, James.
So, James Impilato, thank you so much, and thanks for all your help.
Thank you. Take care.